This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 17th of November, 1953. The title of this lecture is Getting Up Speed, Part 1. This tape is 60 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions. Please note, this tape ends abruptly, as did the original master recording.
Okay, this is the second session, the afternoon session, November the 17th, the first hour. This morning I gave you some things to do with regard to putting emotion in things. And I found out that many were neglecting the emote and putting some shun in. Joke. And it's a very funny thing. I'll tell you an operating principle which you should operate with. And the motto of a case is, and the significance of and the reason why of a case is they can't look at it. And if you take any case anywhere, you think offhand that it's a problem of they don't know it. Now, this is not an attainable, an instantly attainable goal for people. They can't just suddenly, pang, for some reason or other, know it, because they want to carefully let go of the stuff they've got their hands on. See? They want to let go of it very carefully. Now, for instance, there are a couple of techniques you can run on people which will just stop their clocks completely. I should tell you these for the benefit of humanity, some of which has been going on too long already. But one of these is a button. It's a magnificent button. There's nothing wrong with this button at all, except it stops people's hearts. And you could, of course, say that this was a fine button to have around, but watch who you're trying to treat with it. Now, if you've double terminal constancy, just that, just double terminal constancy in a bracket for a while. All of a sudden, the guy's ticker goes pocket-a-pock, pang, pang, pocket-a-pock, pock, pocket-a-pock, pock, pang, pang, pang. Because he ordinarily is running it on his body. And that's the one thing the heart does, be constant. That's the only order it's got. Is do, don't, do, don't, do, don't, do, don't. Only it says, do, duff, don't, duff, do, duff, don't, duff. That's all it does, you see. Now, I'm not mincing matters with you. Tell you that you can simply take the human anatomy to pieces and screw all bones around with what we're doing here, so you can go too far with these techniques. There's nothing to be afraid of with the techniques we have, but you can actually go too far with them. And one of them is this button constancy. Persistence doesn't process that way for some reason, or the idea of persistence. But constancy brings in the second dynamic, nostalgia, the genetic line. Boy, it just runs on constancy. If you want to turn on beautiful sadness on somebody, just start running constancy. They find out that's the one thing that's been demanded of them all their lives. They must be constant. And this, of course, is persistence. And persistence is the one, anything that is not admired persists. But let's get back to simplicity. Real simplicity. There aren't very many of these buttons. They're just constancy and two or three more. They're relatively unimportant. What you can say is a common denominator of all three clears is they don't look. They think. Now, there's a world of difference between thinking and knowing. Thinking is that process in which a person engages by which he hopes he will someday come to know. Now, the funny part of it is that he knows already. And the more he thinks, the less he knows. They used to talk about that non-communicative owl. You remember in grade school, this non-communicative owl. He must have been set up by the fourth invader force in this universe. I think they invented the tomb and so forth. It was a wise old owl sat in an oak, and the more he saw, the less he spoke. And the more he spoke, the more he heard. Why can't we all be in effect? And this made him very learningful. We're assured of this. Made him very learningful. The only trouble is that unless you were talking directly on the line of agreement, which brings people into the state they get into finally, where they're more effect than they are cause, unless you're talking on that, boy, there's really a darn little excuse for education. But if you're talking on that, you are undoing. You are undoing the agreement. Now, it's something like a large and complicated watch. And this watch has to be taken apart. It can be taken apart solely and strictly on the same basis of you take apart a baby takes apart a watch, you know? He takes it apart with a hammer. Well, anybody can take a watch apart with a hammer. If you want to take a watch apart, meaning you don't want a watch with a hammer, why, I advise you to go down and find a big electric shock machine or something like that. That takes watches apart with hammers. And that's not the right way to go about it, because after the parts get that strewn around, it's very difficult to take the watch apart in an orderly fashion. And to some degree, we are taking a watch apart. The only trouble with this watch, however, is that it has four balance wheels, eight mainsprings, and no handle to wind it. The handle to wind it has disappeared. And then people run down. And we can't wind them up again. So the thing we do is actually start taking balance wheels and mainsprings and things, excess mainsprings and other things out of it, and all of a sudden we've got the neatest, best working watch you ever saw in your life. But if we take it apart with a hammer, we don't get that effect. We just simply get, well, we get psychiatry, we get a lot of things, atom bombs. That's taking a watch apart with a hammer. The way to settle a political affairs of worth is not to solve underproduction and overconsumption and overproduction on the second dynamic and so forth. These are not the problems to solve. The way to solve that is you get a formula, see, and it's got a lot of wild figures in it, but it all adds up somehow or other if you put enough figures in it. And then you put this to work on uranium, and you get some plutonium, you put that all together and put it in the hands of an idiot, and tell him to press the buttons. And the watches come apart, believe me, they just strew their mainsprings all over the place. I saw a cartoon one time down at Caltech, one of the small trade schools on the other coast. They teach carpentry and things there. Anyway, they had a nice cartoon, and this professor is standing in front of a very large class, and he's saying, gentlemen, I have here the end product of all science. In this capsule is enough explosive to destroy the universe. They haven't been admired for this, obviously, or they wouldn't go on persisting. Well, it is not a very orderly thing to do, for instance, to solve a society the way somebody solved arthritis. If you want to run back on the track and examine facsimiles with yes and no and an e-meter, why, it'd be very pleasant for somebody who's in good shape to do this, and very horrible for somebody who's in bad shape to do this, by the way, because they bog. You know? You find that there are facsimiles floating around you with a G in some place, and you can contact them. They had to do this place known as Arslicus, which was just built without planets. It's just endless roads going through the sky. You see, they just went in all directions. And there's where we picked up boredom and monotony on this track. You can just run this for a couple of minutes on a PC and he just gets tireder and tireder and tireder. He has no idea why he's getting so tired. But it's the fact that nobody could ever stop working. And a person went about 10,000 lives there, returning back to a body and using that body and wearing it out. And each time he'd come back, he'd be assigned, and he had a cross mark on him, they had him by the wavelength, you might say. And they had a piece of the body which they'd given him. And when he tried to escape, of course, they put pain in that piece, and that would hurt that part of the body, so he would come right back. And when his body was worn out, or the Sasta guard or something like that, they'd just knock off that body, and he'd report back again. And they'd say, this is a tile maker, third class. He's all trained. And into the body, next body that's coming out of the vats, bang, out he goes. Biological society, built in the sky. Well, when that thing went to pieces because of an overdose of gravity, it really went. It scattered pieces all over the universe. You sometimes get a tumbling sensation in a pre-flare. We're not going to audit facsimiles. This is just fun, just to show you what might have been going on the track. Well, This made a person very insistent about being dead when he was dead. There is basic on being dead when you're dead. You're just not going to run any kind of nonsense about checking back in and being assigned a new number. You're going to have some randomity, see? And when a fellow's dead, he is the most insistent person you ever saw. I dropped by a funeral parlor one day. I kind of sailed in one end. I noticed lilies of the valley, and it was very nauseating all up and down the street. It was getting more and more nauseous. So I decided to pick it up with some random and hadn't anything else to do. And I went in one window and so forth. And the thing was still in the body. The funeral parlor. I had a guy laid out on the table. And you could bat the body, get back an electronic reaction. Pow, pow. See? And he was just absolutely frozen, see? In a mad rage. I'm dead, you understand? Dead! Because they kept trying to revive him, evidently, with pole motors or something of the sort. The body was all scarred up. He'd been drowning or something. They keep trying to revive him and trying to revive him and trying to revive him and working over him and so forth. And that means he wasn't being convincing, you see? And boy, he was a dentist like you ever saw. Of course, when they finally bombed his body and so forth, he finally said, well, we're convinced. Shut up. He hides this from himself by occlusive screens and so forth. He doesn't let his right foot know what his right frontal lobe is doing. He doesn't get these things into communication with each other. He has to break communication in order not to know. See, he breaks communication with the body, and now he doesn't know anything about the body. And there's the system of breakdown which he uses. Now, he's gone through this system of breakdown constantly and continually. How does he do this? In order not to know if he's already perceiving, so he gets into a perceiving van, in order not to know, it's only necessary not to look. He can think about it, suppose about it. Most everybody is going around while they're traveling through life in this direction. Their head's over this way. They're going 90 miles an hour in that direction. Well, they can think about it. They can say, well, you know, I think there's a turn up here someplace. But that system comes all the way down the track. Now, if they didn't look at, feel any emotion about, feel any effort about, and finally, didn't even think about something on the Ars Licus band, why, once in a while, they figured they might skip a cycle. That's really true. They kept a vat full of stuff. When they gave the guy the body, they took a piece of this body and they kept it alive in a solution. This is science at work. They kept it alive in this solution over here, and that was a piece of body that matched him, of course, and all he had to do was torture this piece, and he hurt. You can do that, by the way, if somebody is madly Russian doctoring around sometime. We get a nice big laboratory. Be sure and get somebody that builds the Frankenstein equipment for the Frankenstein pictures, you know? The kind of big drums that go bzz, bap, bzz, bap. You get some of that in there just to convince the public of what you're doing. You can conduct all sorts of experiments of this character, which are fabulous. You can hypnotize somebody and say, all right, you are now Malenkov. Just like that, you can say, you are now Malenkov. And be in the same position there, Malenkov, be in the same space. That's right. This guy is drugged, you know, drug hypnotism. All right. Now, I have a terrible headache. You now have a terrible headache. You know that you could actually detach him to the point where he would go on monitoring Malenkov. You actually say, beat it, and he would leave enough in the body to keep this one tick, 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 and go and monitor somebody else's body. This is politics earlier on the track. Now, this has gotten to be almost a habit on the track line. All kinds of weirdities come up. Fortunately, we don't have to have anything to do with these weirdities. I mean, it doesn't matter in our processing today what these things are. And this is talking about a laboratory lineup. If you really wanted to make a society stand on its ear and become completely fogged about the whole thing, you just start doing things like this, and you would get these effects. I mean, Malenkov would have a headache. That's all there is to that. Mysticism, by the way, is actually an effort to suppress this kind of technology by reversing it. You know, if you deny hard enough, and if you resist evil, and That's not truly mysticism. That's Christianity or anything else. That was the greatest invention of the last 2,000 years. By the way, the resistance to evil. I'll say a little bit more about that. But let's get back on this look thing. All right. As long as this beakler you've got drugged on the table doesn't know where he is, you can convince him he's someplace. You see that? See the principle? Well, the only way he can be convinced that he is someplace is by not permitting him to look. See, if he doesn't look, if he doesn't see, then he can be told he's anyplace, and he has to believe one. So hypnosis is just simply the matter of confusing a person to where he looks too hard at something, and then you don't let him look at it, and that loses him. But any number of techniques can be born out of this fix or unfix attention hypnotically. You see, the whole subject that we're studying is actually attention fix, unfix, where viewpoints and space are concerned. But that requires lookingness. So we can take a person and actually have him be someplace else when he is right there. See, he'll still keep this body, but he'll actually be and operate someplace else. Now, you run into this every once in a while with a preacher. We call this inverted dynamics. What dynamic are they inverted on? They invert on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7, 8. Actually, there's about 10 cycles of inversion, at least 10. They just keep inverting and then re-inverting and then inverting and then re-inverting, and each time with less horsepower until you get them just completely run on down the line. Now, any one of the oddities and the phenomena which you observe below the level of knowingness itself, just spontaneous knowingness. What do I mean by that kind of knowingness? And it's simply, you'd sit right there, you wouldn't look, and you'd know that there was a telephone number somewhere else. In other words, that is just instantaneous knowingness. Would you know by looking? No. It's a type of pervasion without perception. But boy, don't ever mistake it. A guy who can't see doesn't pervade without perception. This fellow who can pervade without perception, boy, he's got Superman whip, the way he can look through walls. Oh, that's terrific, you see. And that's way, way up. Every once in a while you walk into some sad apple, some gentleman, who is utterly convinced that he is telepathing all over the shop. Oh, boy, he telepaths with good, he does. They sit down and they concentrate and they do this to influence other people's minds. I'll tell you how you influence somebody else's mind. That drill you were doing this morning will do more to influence somebody's mind because you can transfer thinkingness the same way. And we'll do some drills on that later. You just simply handle and monitor somebody. He thinks what he thinks and so forth. That's all there is to it. That's telepathy. What do you care what he's thinking? Make him think something else. Anyway, people who go around and practice telepathy so they know what other people are thinking, that tells you what? Tells you immediately the fellow must be bottom scale. Because he's interested in what somebody else is thinking. Well, boy, when you go around and listen to homo sap thinking, this is really the most enjoyable thing you can do. Is just sort of go down the street or drive a car or something of the sort and pass a lot of people and pick up what they're thinking about. Most of them are thinking kind of a mental audio, sort of a... most non-sequitur stuff you ever listened to. And the fellow says, well, now let's see. I ran across one day while I was driving into town. I got so entranced with it, I forgot to get out of the car until I'd gone beyond my destination. But my body had turned, but I thought the body in the car was very interesting. But this person was doing the most fascinating job of driving. Now I step on the throttle. He was driving with all of his mechanical motions and so forth, planned audio in advance. Oh, this is real fine. And I kept expecting the car to run into something, and I was minus randomity that morning and decided I'd love to see a good wreck. So I just rode along. Very fascinating. Now, this sounds wild to you, but people do think like that. They just talk. Blah, 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 blah. Now, you listen to people talking, and they sure sound reasonable. Listen to people, two people talking across a store counter while they're buying something. And you'd just merely assume that those two people are being reasonable. The possibility is that you haven't listened to them. And if you were to really sit down and listen to these two people talking across the counter, just run-of-the-mill, homo sap today, you would hear some of the most fascinating non-sequiturs you've ever heard in your life. Where do these non-sequiturs come from? Now you've got not look on a symbolic basis. If a person can know everything, he can look at everything. And there's the test between the top and the bottom of the scale. If he's got instantaneous knowingness, boy, he sure got instantaneous lookingness. He can do such tricks as look up 18 pages deep in a phone book and read the whole column aloud to somebody else. Relay it to a body and read it aloud. That's real high, see. And you can get perfect imagery while exteriorized on anything. You start fooling around with this stuff very much, it keeps saying there's a barrier, there's a barrier, there's a barrier, there's a barrier, there's a barrier. And you have to dim that down and keep it dimmed pretty well in order to get any randomity or be any place. Now, what's not looking? And not looking, not feeling, not effort, not think. See? First, it's not look, so we feel. Now, it's not feel, so we have effort. So it's not effort, so we think. So it's not think on that band, you see. And it's, again, some lower order of looking, such as with messed eyes. Now, it's not look, and again, a lower order of feeling, such as with a body. See? But then it's not feel with the body, so effort with the body. And then it's not effort with the body, so it becomes think with the body. And then it's not think with the body. And we got almost there. All right. Now, a symbolical level takes up on this, you see, and it's just one of these cutting out one right after the other on that band. Now, we can just add up to the side of the tone scale up here, a scale which starts up at the top with no. Complete certainty on everything and anything, anywhere, at any time. That's just complete no. An almost unobtainable height if one stays in an area where, to produce any randomity at all, he has to pretend he doesn't know. As we immediately cut it down from that and go to 20 on the band. All right. Now, next step, then, that we get interested in, as far as people and beingness is concerned, would be, the highest step in which we really get interested is in look and not look. See, it would be know and not know way up the top there. He'd have to not know on something, and this produces a randomity. In other words, he's got to choose something out to fight it. And that gives him action and motion. And he gets into action and motion, and he's happy about it. It isn't true that everybody everywhere in every universe, you know, has action and motion. That's his peculiarity in this universe. You have to learn all kinds of weird tricks, and these weird tricks are motion. It's real peculiar when you first run into motion. It's quite interesting because it produces emotion, which is quite different than you run into elsewhere. I had a pre-clear one time. He would just sit, and he wouldn't think or anything of the sort. And what he was doing, I didn't quite know. But I put him on an E-meter, and it didn't wiggle. Nothing wiggled. And I started batting him with just random dates. Good old electropsychometry. Just start hitting with dates. Billions of years ago and present time. And all of a sudden, present time started to wobble around. I ran into a duality. Some kind of a weird situation of Lord knows where or what. There was some place where everybody merely sat around and knew. And he was stuck there. So I unstuck him and got him in motion. Probably a terrible disservice. But the point is that not everywhere do things go into motion. But here in this universe, they go into motion. If you could avoid just all motion and get a process that had nothing to do with any kind of motion, you'd be way ahead of yourself. But there is no such process that I know of, because you've got to track the line of agreement somewhat in order to take the watch apart smoothly. So we've got a problem in taking the watch apart. Of, in some cases, very low, and in some cases, a very slight bit of not look. In other words, not perceive. It's a better phrase. It's the gradient scale of perception in reverse, then, which marks the tone scale band in which we're interested from 20 down. The gradient scale of non-perception. The essence of perception is the definition of what is space. Space is a viewpoint of dimensions. Now, a viewpoint of dimension, then, requires some kind of a perception. Immediately we have space, we have some kind of a perception understood. As soon as this perception is understood, we are able to proceed. Now, the less perception a person is able to attain, the lower he would fall on this band. But remember, this band inverts and then reinverts and then reinverts and reinverts on each dynamic. So it's not a smooth track down. I mean, it's a complex band. That is to say, for every level on the tone scale, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 dynamics. And for every band down, they turn over again. So that you have a fellow who is inverted. You'll see what I'm talking about a little bit later when you do some of this process. When you invert an 8, we start out with a fellow at 8. What is symbolical of this super knowingness way up at 40? Well, that's super knowing. This is, of course, what you would call. He's God and knows it. It doesn't necessarily mean he's God of the mixed universe. That's a different thing. But as far as he's concerned, he's God and he knows. The 8 dynamic, sure. 7 dynamic, he can make spirits, for sure. 6 dynamic, he can make mess. And we go on down the line, and we fall down again. And then we get to an inversion. And it goes in now. He slips out of one, so he becomes a particular god. Now, as he reinverted down, he'd probably get into the Olympus sort of a standard, like Athena or, well, Jove. That is a particular god of something, you think? We've particularized. Well, this is an inversion again. So we've gone, he's turned away from himself to be the something of something else. And in each case, as you go down, you finally get all the way to the bottom. You'll find fellows in insane asylums insisting madly and wildly, if they're pretty high on the band, that they are God. And pretty low on the band, so forth, why you'll just have them merely praying to God all the time, just incessantly. God is finally other determinism again. They take over as they own things, to make this easier to understand, as they own and are things, they then unbecome. So we've got an inversion of becoming and unbecoming and becoming again and unbecoming each time in a lessening scale. See, on the upper band, he's God and knows it. This is in the psychotic bands, and we will get to where 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 8 inverts again. Now we've got somebody who is the effect of God. So we get become and unbecome. And in each one of these things, he's cause. This should explain, by the way, a manic to you. He's cause. And then, as it inverts, he becomes the effect now of what he was cause before. So he just keeps on going down this way, cause and effect, cause and effect. And as you go down the tone scale, he slides to the left, and he goes over to the right, and he slides to the left. He is something which he isn't. And then he unbecomes what he hasn't been, what he thinks he's been but hasn't been. You get the compounding delusion. He is. You make that very clear. He is. See, he decides he is something. Well, he isn't anything. I mean, he's himself. That's all he is. That's plenty. If he really were himself, that'd be terrific. But he becomes something else, and then as he is cause, in that, he gradually involves himself until he has to unbecome it, and he becomes the effect of it. The second law of magic is do not be hoist by thine own petard. In other words, don't blow yourself up with your own bomb. Don't knock your silly head off with your own wand. Because cause and effect, cause and effect. Well, this gives us inverted dynamics. This makes the fellow one, and then we go down a whole row of dynamics, and we get to a point of where he's the effect of one. Now, this would start him out as a thetan in good working order, and would finish him up on one cycle as a thetan who was being affected by a thetan that he had been. And this is a person's past sneaking up on him. This is people's avidity for studying this past. But unfortunately, the past is nearly always up tone scale. A few generations ago, people were moving faster.
This lecture is continued on side 2 of this cassette.
So here we have not look. Now let's get how we get not look out of this become and unbecome. It's very simple. If a Thetan is looking at 60 miles an hour, now let's just be real crude about this. Let's say his lookingness is traveling 60 miles an hour, and it meets something coming at him 90 miles an hour. His lookingness is coming back at him now 30 miles an hour. Is that right? It's real simple. If he's looking at an angle, he will simply get his attention brushed off. As a matter of fact, if he looks head-on on anything, he just starts to look head-on, his attention will be thrown off of it. Now, you can run this experiment with any individual. You can tell him simply to look around a 360-degree sphere. You want to get somebody who is wearing glasses and tell him to do this because he'll get it right in the face. You just tell him to look around at various depths until he finds an impression of something somewhere. And he said, what kind of an impression? Well, just an impression. Just search very carefully across this sphere, see? And look very carefully up this way. Really look up there. What do you mean? Look at the walls and so forth? No, you know, kind of into the ether, you know? Just up this way. And just use some strange word so he won't look straight at mist. And just search it very carefully, and he'll start looking, you know. And you look. You look. Bang! See, right in the eyes. Nearly every time. I've done this on people and they cursed me for an hour. Look at various distances. There's stuff waiting out on the fringe of consciousness. Perception has to do with impressions and particles and so forth. And when that velocity hits one of these ridges sitting out there, we don't have to know too much about ridges, that's just another barrier. People get happy about ridges, by the way, and they start validating ridges, and they just get more and more ridges, and the ridges get heavier and heavier and thicker and more of them. Anytime you start validating something too heavily, it has a tendency to become real, because that's the way things are created. So this stuff up here can get solider and solider and solider and solider until, boy, a fellow can't move. He can make air. You can actually, by concept, make air so solid that you kind of have to walk through a room as though you were at the bottom of the sea. You can just get real solid. I mean, everything you get, what are you doing? You're just packing it up. All right, now this not lookingness. He gets off there and he takes a look up here someplace. And he looks up there someplace. And he looks up there someplace. And all of a sudden he'll hit one of these ridges and it'll discharge. Because it's only his perception that can discharge it. It's set up there to discharge. When? Some past date. And he's just carrying it forward. He probably has a machine mocking it up all the time, see? Real smart, real cute. New automaticity. And he looks at it, he sets this thing off. Well, the way this thing was set up to operate was every time his perception went across a certain subject, he has a bunch of lighted relay stations. And if you figured out the perimeter around a preclear as the coast of the United States with the preclear in the center of it, and every time his attention went on certain subjects or looked in certain directions, that attention, because he saves energy, you see, is then shunted to every lighthouse on every coast in the United States and activates every machine that's there. That's the way he triggers all these things off and keeps going. Oh, he's a complex piece of machinery, that's right. By blowing up the United States, you would, of course, dispense with the lighthouses. But this is a little rigorous, because he can't dispense with all these lighthouses instantly. You can simply get him to take over control of these lighthouses. It doesn't take too long to get a fairly good working order, because there's only a few lighthouses to get him in trouble. He swears they're lighthouses, too. They're real important, and they're just what he needs, and so on. But what do you know? That perimeter, if you could just set down a bigger United States with bigger coasts, in addition to the first one, with a whole new set of lighthouses, they're getting slightly activated too. Now we get a bigger United States, you see, and we get more coasts. This is actually apparent. If you get up above some frequency and turn up your wave band, you can see. Get more coasts, and that's a third ring now. They get slightly activated, too, every time he thinks some kind of a thought. But if he thinks a thought that is really in that direction, my boy, these things go around like a pinball machine. It's real interesting. This is not anatomy, as far as the body is concerned. This is actually a Thetan's, to some degree, is anatomy. All right, we get a bigger United States, and we put it down on this whole picture. You can see how this goes, because it goes out there a couple of light years in both directions, as far as he's concerned. I mean, it's not small, is the area he's covering, because it's his own space. See, so this is pretty big. He's a big guy. Well, now we get into this lookingness. gradually he has to, in order to turn off the automatic machinery, he has to look closer. You get this? He can't look as far. Or if he has some automatic relays all set up electronically, right in close, he has to look way out all the time. He doesn't dare look up here. The second he does, he gets pinged. It's an actual physical blow that he would receive. But he receives just a trickle of it, you see, just enough to take his attention away. Totally mechanical. It's as though you were asking somebody to look into the teeth of a fire hose. And this is just not going to work as far as he's concerned. So every time he starts to look towards some kind of a subject of any kind that has some automaticity and a relay station on it, his attention just goes zong, and he's off of it. So you try to explain to the preacher, the trouble that is wrong with you, Mr. Very Pre, is the trouble is that you are having difficulties domestically. And this upsets our processing. Do you know that you'll occasionally run across one? He could see, have a black eye. He could have his shirt half torn off him every time he called him. He could have the police over to quiet the riot 3 nights a week. And he just looks at you very calmly and he says to you, that couldn't possibly be the trouble with my kids. And you look at this boy and you say, God save. What's wrong with him? Well, I'll tell you what's wrong with him. He's got so much commotion. Every time he tries to look at it, his tension flicks off of it. He's got a complete occlusion on it. You ask him what he had for breakfast, if he's having a rough time in the family, something like that. You know what he had for breakfast. Well, all right. What gas station did you last stop at to fuel your car? Oh, well, down there. 9th and Chester, and until Ford attended down there named Joe got 9.1 gallons, and the cost was so many dollars and so many cents. Huh? That was 10:32 in the afternoon, and the date was the 8th. That was a Wednesday. You say, boy, what a sharpie. And then you say, well, now, to take up your domestic affairs. Well, I'm not having any domestic trouble. Well, now, that is putting something in highly extreme form. Very extreme form with a PC. But let's just narrow this down into what actually occurs with regard to this. I mean, that does occur. But this person goes around all the time. I mean, he's got this button. You just have to run the button on him. Let's tell him as an auditor that he must run this button. We say, all right, now run this button of people's wives departing from them. People's wives and people's husbands departing from them. And that's the button you should run on this next case. Now, when you finish up the session and so forth, I'm going to make sure by the time you finish the session that you at least run that button. You say, sure. You betcha. Yeah. And you run the fence pretty clear a couple days later. Pretty clear is walking around. What room? Nothing's been done for him. You say, go ahead and get a hold of this auditor. What did you run in that session? Oh, just what you told me. What did I tell you to run? Oh, you said to do a little bit of straight wire next to last list. And you said to run some step ones and orienting straight wire. And I did that. And then I double terminaled his difficulty with his liver and so on. And you say, well, how about husbands and wives departing from him? Oh, I guess I just... There wasn't time in the session. Now he's got a reason, so he's got to justify. There wasn't time in the session, and he may even invent one to make himself completely right and say, I tried to run it, but so-and-so. You can take auditor pre-clear teams that have failed and get 2 emails. And you can ask the pre-clear what the auditor's been running. And the auditor's machine will plong, plong, plong. And the pre-clear's machine will sit steady even though it hasn't been run out. The auditor, because of this, unless he snapped well up the line, is always running out of pre-clear's, which should be run out of the auditor. Because of this difficulty of lookingness. Now let's take lookingness in symbols. We can understand human behavior in terms of lookingness. We've advanced an awful long way. That's what I'm trying to show you very briefly. We say to this person, where did you get that hat? And they say, oh, hats are brighter colored this year. And I ask my aunt about hats. And, you know, she used to be in the style business. She was in New York, and she, a long time she was a dress designer. She has some of the loveliest dresses, and so on. She used to particularly take a great deal of pains in matching them up with shoes and so forth. And by the way, I think I've got to go out the street and get a shine. What you said was, where did you get the hat? Hey, this is real fun. Now, you just look at this in Homo Sap. It becomes very, very amusing as a game. You ask him, does this streetcar go to Poplar Place? Oh, it's about 25 minutes. 25 minutes to where? Well, it's about 25 minutes out on the line here. What is Poplar Place? Oh, we don't go there. That's the other streetcar. You've just asked him about something that he just couldn't look at, that's all, which is locational position. Location, position. So he went off into time, and he went off into something else. Well, if you look at people who are real bad off, if this is their attention, they're going this way. Here's the center of the case. Here's the buttons and buttons and buttons. So we look at them, and their attention, we say, look at the ashtray. And we'll just say that ashtray is really what should happen on that case. Look at the ashtray, and his attention, this hand line here. So he goes up here. Over here is a connecting thing which says cigarettes. And he'll say, have you, I don't know, when I was quite young, I used to play with matches. Now, take a look at this ashtray and let's see whether or not we can't pick up something about your mother and get a little straight wire on your mother and so forth. All right, now just let's recall a time. See, his attention all the time you're talking, since the word mother is idling like that. Now, let's get a time when your mother spanked you. Well, I don't think that's what's wrong with my case. Actually, it's a question of matches. I remember being punished, and then afterwards I was sick for a long time. Now, auditor will do this. You'll have a case in progress. Case will be coming along very well. Case will be doing all right in terms of communication. The auditor adjudication of the speed of communication of the case says the case is progressing. That's all an auditor needs to know. And boy, before very long, we ought to know real well what this is all about, so we don't have to ask somebody how he feels. You ask people how they feel now to be courteous, not because you don't know. You know, and then you ask. Just to be courteous, just because man talks that way. Not because you have to find out. So, we ask him, do you feel better today? Well, I don't know, I had an awfully bad night last night. I haven't had a bad night for a year. Is he trying to be insulting? No, he sure isn't trying to be insulting. The fact of the matter is, you've asked him about his condition. That's one thing he can't face. He's totally justifying, trying to look for some justification of condition. Why is he looking for justification? Because he's got logic machinery sitting around. And he flips in this direction, and it shoots him off over in this direction. He pings a couple of these relay stations, and that clicks a couple more things. And above all this, how wrong can you get? Dead. So he has to be right somewhat, so he has to tell you he's alive, and this means he has to be right, so he explains to you how right he is. And you ask somebody, are you going to the theater tonight? And he'll very often tell you how alive he is. This routinely. And you ask somebody if he's eaten yet, and he'll tell you how alive he is. But if he considers this discourteous, he will tell you about how dead he is, kind of threateningly. Or needing energy or sympathy. In other words, he goes off into computations. Pang, pang, pang. All of this thinkingness sets up because his lookingness collapses on a certain subject. So he thinks. And then he doesn't know what he's thinking about. And then that inverts. And he finds himself looking at something else. And then eventually that other thing inverts. And so he's looking at something else. Psychology, our unlamented predecessor. We have nothing to do with psychology. Psychology is the study of the human brain and stimulus response mechanisms. And its code word was man to be happy must adjust to his environment. In other words, man to be happy must be a total effect. It was almost fatal, by the way, to run into that and tell somebody he has to start making the best of it and putting up with things and taking a rest. And that'll fix him right up. Well, anyway, we have this problem coming up continually where you have distracted attention. This is one method of distracting attention. The other method of distracting attention, of course, is to pull it in some other direction. Now, in psychology, they neglect the factor of causation. Because they neglect treating the human body and trying to understand the human body. So they, of course, are not looking at that thing which monitors a human body. It's a thing. So they never would have found the thing. Furthermore, the thing works like radar. Radar is much closer to it than messed eyes. Messed eyes depend on light coming in and hitting and agitating something or other for the GE to see. But what do you know? You never look at what the GE sees. I don't know why you use one. You don't feel what he feels, see what he sees, nothing. See, this is a real weirdy. You've got viewpoints dropped over the iris. And you've got hearing points over the eardrums. And you've got feeling points over the fingertips. And along the nerve lines. You've got stations set up so that you can feel what he feels, but you never get a relay from the GE. That's real interesting, isn't it? You can monitor a GE if you want to, and turn him into nip-ups because he's a total effect. Practically total effect. So that you generate any kind of energy, you're going to affect him one way or the other, but you're not doing anything with the energy normally that you have to have in order to run the GE and that sort of thing. Once upon a time, you could probably just run one. You know, it didn't have to eat, nothing, you just walk up a body. There's a certain shame. The first shame on the track, by the way, is when a person no longer is able to generate enough energy to run something, when he starts to eat and get the energy from someplace else. Eating is your first dog down. Then below that level, he can't make up new mock-ups, just pang, pang, pang. So sex is invented as a substitute for eating and to continue lines of mock-ups. All right. When we look at lookingness, we are looking at the same time at its collapse states, which is feelingness, effort, thinkingness, and not thinkingness. And every time we look at lookingness, we're looking at geographical position. And you'll get so darn sick and tired of geographical position. Because as far as this universe and as far as three universes are concerned, the key to them is contained in the prelogics. The first thing Theta does is create space and time and objects in them and creates them. And then the next thing it does is locate things. See, it just creates these things. But that is locational itself. And then it locates things in space and time. You get a pre-clear to start locating things in the barriers of the massed universe. It's just as valuable to getting to locate things in other people's universes, by the way. We have three universes, all locational. Viewpoint of dimension. The moment we're into space, we're into location. And the second somebody tells you that he is lost mentally or feels lost, it's because he's not looking at something. You see, first he didn't know, and then he had to look. First he said he didn't know, and he said he'd look. And then he didn't know, and he did look. And then he couldn't look. And then he decided that he'd better feel. And then he wanted to feel, so he couldn't really look anymore. And he started on down, and here goes your PC. Each time he tries to look, his attention is shunted off someplace else. So I give you buttons to run this morning. That's what we're getting around to. And, of course, here and there, you avoided running the key buttons. You run the tone scale buttons because they were all written down. The very important button there is ridicule. You see, you here and there, in the offices over there, you dropped ridicule. It's very neat. That's... no, not ridicule. Now, instructing on any such subject as this, using the symbols which comprise the English language, which of course is a symbol relay system itself. It's quite remarkable that we get across anything on a symbol relay system. We use these buttons and point them up, and we get drills in progress, and next thing you know, we're running into one of these knock looks. We could be very, very uncomfortable if you simply were crushed into looking. Boy, we could bust the watch real royally. Smash. And the way to really get a busted watch is to have somebody else look for you. You know, go around and clean up somebody else's bank. You can do that. You can go down the street and little crippled boy's hobbling along, and all of a sudden turn his leg red hot, stretch out the bone, straighten it up, and he goes sort of with a crutch. You can do this if you're hot enough, but does it do him any good, really, in the long run? No, it doesn't. Wonder why. Boy, has he been an effect, but royally. You made him more of an effect than he was before. So you crippled his own self-determinism to some degree. He'll have a straight leg, but he'll wonder after a while if it isn't better to have a broken back. So when you interfere with self-determinism to that degree, you're in trouble. That doesn't matter. It doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. I mean, I'm just telling you why. You can sure produce an effect. Now, we have, in any of this instruction, the process of reversing the line of agreement, which comprises a state not as able as it should be. Now, somewhere up the line, one attains a state of balance on cause and effect, which gives him a sufficiency of barriers to enjoy the game. And not so many barriers that he's now not enjoying it. If you have too many barriers, why, it's being in jail. And if you have not enough barriers, why, no motion, no action. So, as we look up the line here, we're going up against the past. The past is running at higher speed than the present. Why is this? Let's take the fellow who runs a piano. He learns to run this piano. This is in the year 1722. Now, by the way, he's dead. He's wanted to be real convincing now. He died in 1745. He died real dead. Boy, was it convincing. His body was tramped by a horse, and he was completely mangled. There was no doubt in anybody's mind he was dead. By the way, you'll find him holding on to this impact, and so on occasionally, when he needs to be reassured. See, he's not there. He's there. He's not there. He's there. He's not there. You've got a maybe at work, but you also, between these two things, have the certainty of impact. No doubt in anybody's mind that they were hit. You can go back down through a person's lifetime, and you'll find a lot of these impacts sitting around. Boy, there's no doubt in their mind that they were hit. In other words, something produced an effect upon them. They're more certain about what they hit, though, if they're in pretty good shape, because they've certainly produced an effect on something else. Well, anyway, this fellow could play this piano back here in 1722, and he played the piano very beautifully, and he was very fast, clavichord or something of the sort. And he just gorgeous, you see. I mean, he artist. Real fast and terrific virtuosity and the best there was and all of that sort of thing. And yeah, that life's all gone. That's laid away. Doesn't remember. We only live but once, the beautiful sadness of that. He's been very convincing. Death is a sort of an accusation. You say, boy, did you produce an effect upon me, and a bad effect, too, and all your effects are bad, damn you. Because look how dead I am. Of course, a person who can remember is not dead. Okay, so, of course, a person who's dead is dead. You want to really be convincing. So, in 1940, like Mama puts this person down to the piano and says, now you've got to practice for 2 hours a day, and you'll be a good piano player. We've got a good teacher for you, and it costs a lot of money to buy this piano. We're paying $5 a month for it. And we're paying umpteen dollars for course of lessons, not practice on the piano, and the kid, very happy, see? And he starts monkeying around with the piano. Bum, 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 bum. He starts monkeying around, and they show him a piece of music he's supposed to play, and he looks at this music, and it sure doesn't look right to it. It's awful funny. He doesn't pay attention to the music, hell with music. And he finally gets it down to where he's got a boogie beat down here, see, on the bass, and he gets this boogie beat. getting real interested, and the piano teacher says, "No." Mama says, "My God. We're trying to teach you to be a concert pianist, Oswald." And he tries this a couple of more times, you know, kind of speedy, and he'll just have to slow down. He's supposed to read the music, he's supposed to do this, he's supposed to do that. In other words, instructingly, you're making an effect out of it. Crash, 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 crash. All of a sudden, he starts to play the piano one day, and he gets sick. He gets real sick. He doesn't know what on earth is hitting. Nobody else does either. But he doesn't look at the piano. He can't tell anybody it's the piano. He doesn't know it's the piano. And this is your mechanism of the hypnotized subject unable to look at the tie signal of the hypnotist, as you'll find in book one. You know, the fellow says, "When I touch my tie, you'll take off your left shoe." The hypnotized subject never sees the motion. He just doesn't look at it. All right, we have this poor kid there sitting in a fast ridge. A terrific automaticity. Oh, if just left by himself, he could have sorted through so he could have learned the piano without ever contacting that ridge. But now, by being in effect, this he has to learn. They've got to set up all of his piano playing automatically, and as soon as it's being set up automatically according to music, in comes the old ridge. And the second we've got an old ridge coming in on him, it's moving faster than he is. And it goes boom. Boy, don't think it doesn't go boom. All of the automaticity about piano playing, he can't play that fast. Then we get every once in a while a child wonder. He sits down at the piano, 2 years old, bangity bang bang, Mozart and Brahms, zing zing, boom bang. We get a kid 4 years old, and he all of a sudden starts talking ancient tongues. Somebody listens to him for a while and says, "My God, do you realize that you're talking algebra?" And I don't see anything peculiar about it. Just some old automatic ridge. Well, sometimes they can handle them, mostly they can't. And when it caves in, but hard, running faster than that, all right? In the course of study, as we go up along the line, we are continually pushing the preclear to look at things which are running faster than we have the preclear running. So if your cases hang fire at any time, you're just auditing too slow and using too slow a technique. Speed has everything to do with it. So that the fellow can't look quickly, you see. He doesn't look speedily. He doesn't carve through anything. His tension goes off in some other direction. Techniques, as they are developed, make a very integrated picture. Extremely integrated, actually, since they are all designed to pick it up at the easiest end and reclaim with the least excitation of unhandled automaticity. You know, a fellow's memory starts going to pot by handling automaticity. And so forth, unless it's being handled by an auditor and handled very well.